Thanks. Good afternoon. I'm Noah Bottomer from the University of Michigan. I'm the technical lead on our project, our mPortfolio project. And here's Irmala. Let her introduce herself quickly.
Hi, everyone. I'm Irmala Venkatesh. I'm an instructional designer with the project at Michigan.
Great. And we also have Virginia Tech. I believe we'll have Jennifer joining us momentarily. And I guess Mark and Jennifer can introduce themselves when the time comes. So let's get started. So just as a kind of a quick background about Michigan's portfolio project, we began in earnest back in about 2004 with support from our Division of Student Affairs as well as our provost's office. So we've got kind of joint sponsorship throughout the project to the current day. So what we're going to talk about today, just kind of a high-level overview, not really technical details or too much about process or implementation details, but the two primary models that we use at the University of Michigan. And so we see a lot of different needs within the portfolio space, and we're going to focus in on two primary models that we've found to be effective. And the first is our flexible, expressive model, and we'll go into some details about that, including what we mean by that, and then show some actual examples. And then the second model, which is more of a set of models, is more structured than the student-centered or more student-centered flexible model, structured around curriculum components, assessment, and things like learning outcomes and specific competencies. So we'll get started right into the expressive portfolio. Hand this over to Irmala.
Okay, so I'm going to spend a little bit of time defining for you what we consider to be an expressive portfolio. I'm going to talk a lot about the Michigan-specific model, that you might have seen this term outside at different institutions. So I'll start with this definition, a collection of reflections that demonstrate the knowledge, skills, and values a learner has developed from all areas of life. So the idea behind this expressive portfolio is that the creation of a portfolio actually directs students to take stock of their educational experiences, but also their experiences outside of the classroom, and to think about how to integrate their reflection about those experiences into one cohesive identity. So we really have students and learners think about three basic questions. What do I now know about my skills, capacities, and strengths by going through a reflective process? How did I acquire this knowledge? So what are the actions I had to take? What are the experiences I was submerged into? What are the contexts I was in? And how did those shape the development of these knowledge, skills, and capacities? And finally, how can I now apply this knowledge and the methods of acquisition to future experiences? So I'm going to talk a little bit about this, what we call the knowledge portfolio process. This process was developed by a couple of people on our team, Dr. Melissa Pete and Dr. Tiffany Mara, in the School of Social Work when the project first started. And it's specific to Michigan. We have a number of pilots that take our process and then modify it accordingly to kind of serve their needs and to serve the purposes of the students in their pilot. So what we also do is provide students with default text that allows them to create portfolios and kind of have prompts for writing. But those, again, are tools that different faculty and different pilots will modify. So the first phase is understanding integrative learning. So this is the point at which we ask students to reflect on these key learning moments in their life. Again, this depends. This is specific to different pilots as to what they're going to be looking at. But in social work, they might be looking at a field internship that they're working in and looking at what they learned from that experience. They may also be looking at experience outside of the classroom that led them to pursue social work as a profession or pursue the master's of social work as a degree. So we take students through a process of identifying those key learning experiences. The second phase is the point at which they're actually articulating these types of knowledge. So they're creating what's called work showcase pages that demonstrate, you know, here was the important experience I had, here are the skills I gained by the tasks that I did, and here's the impact that it now has on my life. And I'm going to show you an example of one student portfolio so you get a better sense of what this looks like. The third phase is where you're taking those kind of the salient lessons from those different key learning experiences and coming up with a philosophy statement that really reflects what the patterns are, you know, among kind of running through all of those learning experiences. So at that point, students will write a philosophy statement, and then they might write a goals page if that's what, you know, if they decide to do that or if that's what's required of them in their portfolio, to look at specific ways in which they're going to enact those philosophies that they've identified in their learning experiences. And finally, the phase four is the creation of the portfolio. So what does it mean to develop an online identity? How do you present information visually with clarity? And we try to teach students a little bit of that, those visual communication principles as well. Oh, you know what? I want to show the analysis. Yeah, sorry. I took it out of the slides. All right, let me go back up. So let me just show you a sample portfolio very quickly. Is there a... Oh, it's over here. Thank you. So it's a little bit hard to see with this screen, but this is an example of a pretty exemplary undergraduate student who was in the Chem Honors Program. So if you remember the different phases, where Alex would have started was developing a work showcase. So the work showcase, if you look on the left and you see this kind of left-hand navigation, is a series of different experiences from kind of all parts of his life. Everything from what he calls creativity, facilitation, research, which is what he was doing in, you know, within his program, in his major chemistry, down to working with kids, which is a category that he came up with over time as he realized that what he kept doing was working with children as he was thinking, like, what are my experiences? What are my important learning experiences? So he developed a series of reflections, and you'll notice that all of them have the same kind of format. You talk about what the importance of the work is. He develops, you know, his set of tasks that he had to complete. He figures out the skills that he gained from those tasks and the lessons that he's kind of learned and will take with him from that experience. As I said, students will sometimes create a philosophy statement that kind of tie together the themes that might be emerging in that work showcase and create a set of goals that are very specific or general, but think concrete things that students want to do in the future based on what they're writing about. And though it seems kind of backwards, we ask students to create a welcome page at the very end, because the idea is after you've created the content that really, you know, shapes your online identity, what is the quickest way and most concise way, but also creative way, that you can then introduce a reader into your website. Okay.
Great. Okay. So now a quick word about more structured portfolios, and we'll only go through a couple examples today in the interest of time. We've got some more that we could talk about and would gladly talk in individually or what have you there. But we're going to spotlight two of our programs today, one in our dental hygiene program and one from our medical school within the actual medical education, what we call the sociocultural portfolio. And I'll give you some more details in just a second on those. But here are a couple of facets or aspects of these different programs. The scale is pretty important here. We start small with these. So they're very intensive. They're very, very detailed around a set of competencies or a set of activities. So starting small and getting it right, modeling that, and then growing it is important here. They're pretty adaptive. So we're not trying to come up with a given tool or a given model that works for everybody and say, okay, across chemistry, across language, music, medical, whatever, that this is going to be your portfolio model. So we work closely with the programs to have a project in place that can adapt to their needs, or if they decide that they need to add a new competency domain, that's something that we can accommodate, and we work on evolving the tools there. So we've accepted that the flexible expressive portfolio model is going to be very generally applicable across the student population, but then we've got a set of more specialized activities across the different programs. So being adaptive is pretty important there. Assessment is a component across the board here. Because we're talking about things like curriculum, we're talking about learning outcomes, actual assessment of those is kind of intrinsic here. And generally, we focus on the quality of reflection, so the synthesis of the work that's been done, how they think about this in relation to the learning outcomes and so forth, are the important pieces that we actually are mostly evaluating in this phase. Things like the actual papers or presentations or projects are evaluated in the context of the given courses. So this isn't a strict replacement for coursework, but it's kind of an augmentation to. And kind of the last point here is that we're driving towards curricular change in most of these cases. We take this feedback. We understand how the students are learning. We understand how the program is serving or missing the point in a few different areas, and actually feeding that back into the curriculum for evolution. So I'll show you here. This is an example from our dental hygiene program. A few more details. It's a fully online degree completion program. So these are practicing dental hygienists. They actually have a job in the clinic on a daily basis. And so they're completing, going from certification and usually an associate's degree into a bachelor's degree, so a degree completion program. And this is very structured in terms of there's a set of courses that you see across the top represented as the columns here. Things like course 481 is based on leadership. Then we've got oral disease. We've got research and evidence-based practice as another course. And so this is a kind of a structured progression through the materials. But down the left-hand side, what we see are competencies or competency domains. And these are actually designed by the program. They're not from a specialized program association or anything like that in this case. But we see things like leadership, information literacy, health promotion, evidence-based practice, and then community as kind of these competency domains. There are more detailed components in there under each of these that the students actually reflect against, and there's a bunch of context that helps them identify work that they've done as part of the coursework or things that they've seen in the clinic or other places within their lives. And then they reflect about those kind of in the context of a given course. So as an example, in the 481 leadership course, they'll be thinking primarily about things that they see with leadership, whether that's leadership within their clinic, whether that's leadership within group work, or something else, some other component of their life, but really kind of articulating how they've either seen or exhibited those proficiencies, and then kind of giving some detail that the faculty will provide feedback about that. Another important component here is the bottom row is kind of a miniature capstone, if you will, for each course. So at the end of each course, they talk about looking back through all these reflections and how they tie that together with a couple of very specific prompts for the context of that course. And one more thing about curricular change here, I think this is kind of unique. I think it's really special that between each of these courses, because it's a structured progression, we know that this cohort is going to move from 481 to 482. The faculty that are scheduled to teach each of these, and it's relatively small, so we don't have 10 sections of any given course. We've got one or two at any given time. These faculty actually talk to each other, and they say, okay, we were trying to hit these goals, and the students didn't feel that they reached a depth of understanding that we wanted. They said, oh, well, I've got partial mastery, rather than that they're very comfortable. And so they'll actually adjust and supplement some of the materials, or if they think that they did a great job on some additional materials that were not necessarily planned, they might dial some of that back. And this happens on a very adaptive schedule with this program. I think that's pretty innovative, and we're finding a lot of good outcomes there, and there's some papers being written and so forth. Okay, so moving on to another model that's completely different here. This is a screenshot from our sociocultural portfolio, which comes out of our medical school. And let me say just a quick word what I mean about the sociocultural thread within the curriculum. What it means is that there's a set of courses, coursework, and clinical experiences, and so on. But the curricular structure is really based on things like the sociocultural component. There's geriatrics. There are various more technical components that are kind of strung throughout. And we were finding that the students weren't really digging into those and finding those things within the course delivery. There was an activity from these different threads, and then there was another one from a different thread, and another one from a different thread within the courses. But what you actually see her pictured there is Dr. Monica Lipson. She was really driving forward on this sociocultural component and trying to get students to realize that this was an intended component that they were seeing throughout their tenure as a medical student. And this is a way that captures the work that they've done. You can't really read it very well here, but this shows them where they are, where they're going to be going in terms of these specific activities with sociocultural components, things like an identity exercise that understands their presence and their self-perspective. We've got what we see here pictured is a survey that they fill out, which is sociocultural attitudes in medicine. It's kind of an inventory survey to see how they fare with a number of statements that say, here's the very first one, I'll just read it. In a clinical context, I've observed how a patient's sociocultural background influences health and or healthcare decisions. And so the student says, how much do I agree with that? And we see the standard Likert scale, not at all the way through extremely. And so the students see how their responses match up to their peers within their cohort. So this is just one kind of activity that deals with the thread, and it's pulled together here in a kind of chronological fashion. We also have things like assignments that are captured within our learning management system. We've got some things that are just reference materials or kind of hold the date items here that mention a specific point in time where they're going to be doing a project or what have you. And then there's a self-review at the end where they kind of think about how does this all fit together. At the end of the year, I should be more aware about these concepts. And so let me write a little bit about that. So they write a short essay, 1,500 words or so, and then get actual feedback from the faculty, not just on the content of that, but the depth of the reflection and to see which components they've really addressed. I should have another screenshot here, but just kind of a checklist for the faculty to say, okay, this is really great writing, but it's not as reflective as we'd like, or we should have some more specific details on the technical components or the more community-oriented components or what have you. So this is just another example of a very different model that's in place and very tailored to the program. I think I'll move on here, and we'll come back if there's specific questions.
Okay, so I want to just cover quickly some of the things that we do to make sure that this project can actually function in the campus. So we have a lot of support for the learners and educators in the portfolio program. For our students, we do a number of things. Open Studio, the first point up here, is 12 to 15 hours a week in a computer lab that we've reserved where students can drop in and get consultations on everything from, you know, putting out a fire, I need technical help, my I can't figure out how to do something and it's due tomorrow, to I worked on my portfolio last semester, now I'm applying for a job, can you help me clean up the writing? So content, design, technical, we try to provide everything. We are developing learning modules that really drive home the activities I talked about earlier in terms of accessing, you know, what are your skills, what are your capacities and all that, but also some principles of visual communication. So how do you present yourself and your points best in a web format where people aren't going to, you know, maybe even scroll down to read your portfolio? What do you have to say in the very, you know, top left-hand corner? So some of those typical web design things. We, of course, offer trainings campus-wide to students to show up, to sign up online and then show up just to figure out, you know, in 1 hour, how do I actually create and share this portfolio in our learning management system? Then we offer advanced workshops that cover some of the things I talked about, design, content, you know, Photoshop, optimizing images, that kind of thing. And finally, we also partner with our central writing center, Sweetland Writing Center, to get specific help on writing for the web, but just generally getting better as writers. So we'll help with that, but we'll also send students to Sweetland. We also have a partnership with our academic advising so that students can understand how this portfolio might fit into their larger educational experience. The Career Center will help them think about how that portfolio might actually, you know, help them in an interview help them with internships and that kind of thing. So we do try to partner as much as possible. For educators, we do, when we start a pilot or when a faculty member approaches us about portfolios, of course we sit down with them and do individual consulting to make sure that they know that the portfolio work that their students are creating can be kind of automatically included in their syllabus, or that can be subsumed into the syllabus so that faculty are not adding more work for students or more grading for them, right? So we try to make sure there's a lot of overlap in the work that students are doing in a class. And then we offer campus-wide trainings for a number of faculty and program administrators to get the full process and understand how to do some of that. And that usually happens in the summer when they're actually planning their academic work for the following year.
And just a quick word about how the support differs when we talk about the more structured models. Typically, we'll have staff within the program, whether that's an instructional designer or somebody who helps facilitate the program, somebody within that program who handles a lot of that frontline stuff within the program. And we do offer some kind of beginning startup training in terms of this is how this is going to function, this is the basic general flow of the technology, but the general support is within the program. And then we work with the program to give integrated instruction about how the program applies within the tool set. That first point here for educators is really around that. We talk up front about how the curriculum maps and how we might do activities that are effective and actually capture material digitally that is helpful here and suits their goals. So we've got some experience across the diversity there to help that forward. We do provide workshops on giving feedback, or we work with the programs to have workshops with the faculty or the educators to give feedback, to understand that this is a different kind of activity. You're reading material that's written differently. You're reading different kinds of material from the students that you haven't really seen before, and you're not really necessarily sure how to give feedback on that. And actually, Dr. Lipson has written a nice paper about that and gave some presentations recently on what that process is, getting faculty buy-in and helping them actually write well and give good feedback to the students that's constructive. And again, we just have some basic training for the tools that are available, the technical stuff. A quick word about accreditation. Our project to date has not been focused there. A lot of portfolio projects are, whether that's kind of an NCATE thing in your School of Education, or whether that's HLC or whoever you're, and Virginia Tech will mention some of this, who you're involved with there. Our focus has been on internal type programs and looking at curricular review and evolution rather than an external accreditation process. But we are looking at how this can fit in longer term with things like HLC. We recently had a review where we said, okay, we found these things and we think they'll fit in these ways, and we're going to explore that, do some research, try to do some inductive work on understanding what are students exhibiting as far as skills, what are the kinds of feedback that we're giving them, what are those things that are kind of distinctly Michigan or distinctly found within the portfolio context that are not necessarily obvious within the standard course model. So that's something moving forward, but we're not primarily focused on accreditation within our project. A few final things here, some success factors that we think are really important. The gradual growth. We didn't open up to our 40-some thousand students on day one and say that this is your model and you're going to have this for the next 4 years, and we've got it right out of the box. It's been a very gradual growth process where we've made a lot of adjustments as we go. That's really important. Very strong leadership within the programs. I mentioned our medical education, Dr. Lipson. She's kind of a faculty star to work with her peers to get them on board with this process and work with her dean on saying this is a good idea, this is how it should go. That strong leadership is really important. The support for educators and the program alignment we find is essential. You shouldn't start until you're sure or relatively sure that this is the right direction for a program. You shouldn't just say, well, we're going to do something with portfolios and we'll figure it out once we're down the road. Once you've got that program figured out, you can work with those faculty to give good feedback, to understand the evaluation model, and actually participate more fully and get more buy-in. And then the last piece here, before we go into some summary notes, our content and methodology are really driving. It's not the technology. Sure, we've got some technology that supports it, but we try to make that disappear as much as possible. For the most part, they're working on the web, but we're really asking them to engage with the program and the process, not so much the technology. A few summary pieces here. Yep, that'll work.
Okay, so very quickly, these are our takeaway points. The first, implementing portfolios encourages learners to reflect on curriculum and recognize their learning and development over time. As educators, I think we all recognize how important it is for students to understand why it is that they're learning what they're learning. Amazingly, once they engage in a portfolio process where they're really having to think, what did I just learn and why does it matter, and write it down, it's kind of incredible how much they start to understand the flow from one class to another, from one unit to another. And in some of our programs, it's very specifically designed where you have to think about what you just learned in the last class in a kind of a more structured environment. And faculty kind of get that feedback, right? So it shows something kind of important. It's an important transformative moment for learners.
And to follow on to that, once those students are producing different kinds of materials, the educators realize that we've got a different kind of beast here. We've got a different kind of animal that we need to understand that different kind of work, and we need to maybe restructure our curriculum to take advantage of that or offer new opportunities. And we're seeing that within the programs we've shown today, that they are making adjustments based on the initial feedback and process.
Third, educators become very much aware of the learners in their classroom and who they are, where they came from, what they do. It brings some personal experience into the work that they're doing, and we find that faculty have expressed that this changes the way that they teach and the way that they kind of shape the learning environment. One of the things I'm noticing is it shapes the way that they promote the classroom as not separate from the real world, but actually kind of a real world laboratory where the classroom and the activities in a classroom actually start to look like things you might be doing outside of the classroom, so that schism disappears.
Great. And last point here is that we're providing new kinds of data to make these changes, to understand how learning is happening, how teaching is effective or less effective, and providing a new kind of data that really supports the evolution and progress that we're looking for here within the portfolio project itself, but institutionally. We're not just making adjustments willy-nilly. We have a new kind of supportive information available to us. And with that, I think I want to introduce our Virginia Tech friends.
Okay. Hi, I'm Mark Zaldivar. I'm the director of the ePortfolio Initiatives, and this is Jennifer Sparrow, who's our director of Innovation Space. And I'm going to try to, actually, this is a really good framework for us, I have to say, as we get started here. I have this as our plan for what we'll go over, and I'll go over some of it really quickly, but we took a lot of advantage of their slow growth to kind of get ourselves started really quickly. And I think that's one of the reasons that we're presenting together. We didn't really mention it, but we're both using the Sakai LMS for our main framework. And so when I got started back in 2008, I wanted to take advantage of what I saw as really good active models, try to get them into our campus as quickly as possible, but still allow for a lot of the flexibility and engagement that they were talking about as well. So we have a slightly different focus, and Jennifer and I will try to go over that as we go. I don't really want to talk too much about Virginia Tech other than to say that it's a big, diverse place, which is one of our challenges. We do have, 28,000 students. We have several degrees. We have seven colleges across. And one of my tasks was to think about how portfolios fit into all those different models. How will it be different for the College of Agriculture than the College of Engineering? But what are also the similar processes that we could connect together across those as we began to sort of disseminate both the technology and the ideas of portfolios? So just real quickly, as I mentioned, I got started in 2008. The ePortfolio Initiatives office is opened up within, we're based within the Learning Technologies group, although we're very directly connected to a lot of the academic programs that are working on campus, so we're sort of a nice bridge between the technologies and the pedagogies that go on campus. And when I got started, we began with our early innovators. There have been people that have been thinking about both portfolios and electronic portfolios for a while at Virginia Tech, and we identified those projects early as we began to think about it more systematically. But as you see, we didn't have a slow growth. We went really quickly from just a few people that were interested in it to spreading the word pretty quickly, and all of a sudden by 2009 we had 25, and a lot of the motivation for getting started with that was our imminent assessment and accreditation effort that was coming up. So we had to really think about how best to use these tools to, as Noah pointed out, collect new forms of information that would be useful to us in our accreditation effort. Where we are today, we actually have expanded our group quite a bit as we think about what we need to do on our campus, and now we really have about 70 different kinds of projects across all seven colleges. Some of these are course-level projects where we're talking about 15 weeks worth of a portfolio activity, and several are program-wide where we're thinking of 3 to 4 years of student activity and how to manage those as similar processes. We do have about 4,000 students working currently on some form of portfolio projects, and I think they gave you a really good idea of some of them are very expressive portfolios, creative portfolios. Others are heavy assessment efforts and things like that. So what I'll hopefully try to do now is show you some models as we go in just a minute. Thinking forward just a bit as sort of where we are in terms of we've got some adoption going well on campus. We have definitely obviously more than just the early innovators thinking about this process. We're starting to think about it very systematically across campus, not necessarily, as Noah pointed out, the one model to do portfolios in, but how do we expand this process across the entire university? One of our ways in, and I'll show you a model of it in just a minute, was that we're beginning to tie the portfolio processes into the first-year experiences. And so introducing students early to the idea of watching your education grow, choosing pathways, and continually reflecting on that growth as you go. We're also looking at teaching and other faculty portfolios and trying to get educators not only involved in getting their students involved in this process, but them as well, thinking about their growth with courses and the curriculum as well. And then we're also thinking about where it might come into non-academic programs, administrative programs that also need to think about their goals and their development going forward. Where does portfolio processes go in there? So as you see, we're sort of looking at the bleeding edges of portfolios and seeing where they go. We have a slightly different framework to think how I get the message out to campus. I use sort of three key terms as I'm thinking about the functions of portfolios and trying to express that to faculty. And I talk about portfolios for learning and reflection, portfolios for professional development, and portfolios for assessment. Now, I don't think any one of those is extracted from the other. I think I use a Venn diagram, as a matter of fact, to sort of represent that. But a lot of programs come to us with an interest in one or more of those as their primary reason to do a portfolio. They're very interested in reflective activities. They have a high need for assessment, or they might really be a professional development program that needs to express those things. So we use all sorts of different modes for this. This is actually, I don't know, I'll see if I can flip over real quickly. I just want to show you some examples of live portfolios. This is one from our English education program that I find to be highly reflective in its organization. It does very similar things to what we were seeing here before, but in asking an English educator to think over how are you prepared to work in a classroom, the curriculum asks them to continuously connect experiences they have in their student teaching with what they're learning in the classroom. And a lot of this is captured through things like, what do you believe a teacher does? And so they're asked to sort of reflect on that continuously. And if you see here in Crystal's portfolio, there's a lot of links to active materials like podcasts, assignments that she does, and this is really sort of a forwarding of her reflections and connections about that experience rather than just a pure assessment or collection device for it. And I won't show you too much about that, but we'll go on to some other things. This is another program that we use a lot, and I think I've got, let me pull up, Ashley actually is the graduate student that's working with me this term. There's her portfolio. This is a particularly interesting group. She comes out of the dietetics field, and I don't know how much of you know, they have heavy needs for both accreditation for the program that is on dietetics, as well as each student applies for internships after their senior year that gets them their certification to be professional dietitians. So there's high needs to both think about how the education that they put into the 4 years applies in a real-world situation and experiences that students have, as well as the professional aspects of that. These internships are highly competitive, very difficult to get, and they've had really good success from the portfolio crowd. 100% of the people that in this program that have been doing portfolios got their top choice in the internships. And they asked them directly, did you look at my portfolio? Ashley just did hers this summer. And they said, absolutely. Looking at your portfolio was what showed us that you have both the sort of educational background, there's information there, the experiences outside of the classroom to get that done. And so it was really an exposure to Ashley as a professional in that context here. And finally, we talk about, assessment. This shouldn't be third. This is a large part of what we do, and it's always there as we talk about portfolios. I think Noah hit it right when we're talking about finding other ways to look at new kinds of data to get us a good sense of continual growth of our academic programs. And so this is really, for me, an interesting tie because we are talking about, a program being able to develop itself. And I have a picture up here of the English department's portfolio because they very directly use that for curricular change. They have a system where students are introduced to the portfolio in the sophomore year, create it, and by their senior year sort of capstone their synthesis of does it mean to be an English major. The primary audience for this portfolio is actually your advisor, so it's a communication vehicle between you and your professional planner to help you get out there, and so I actually was just showing you they have some results of this. The department uses samples from the student's portfolio every summer to kind of move into how do we improve this course or how do we think about critical thinking within the program, and they sort of take on a new topic each summer as they go forward. But what I also like about this is that it's focused very much on the individual, but very much constantly Olivia, in this case, is being asked, why did you choose this major? What do you think you'll do with a professional writing degree? How will it apply? How does the work that you do here apply outwards to your professional goals and directions? So again, while the program is gathering nice systematic data of different kinds for these, and I guess I do have Olivia's live portfolio here, things like their direction tab, why did you choose this? What will you plan to do with it in the future? How do you use your English major outside the classroom? And again, as the primary person being their advisor that they're communicating this to, it becomes really interesting. And of course, they do say by the time you're done, you'll have a nice collection of resources to use for applying to graduate school and other areas as well. So as I say, none of these are isolated from each other, but they're good concepts to work over top of each other. So, and there's the Venn that I use, as I say. So we sort of are looking for a model now as we're starting to mature to bring all that together within the tool set. And so this is sort of the way that we approach it. And I guess a really good example of this is thinking about our first year experience portfolio. We just began this fall with our first pilots in the first year experience. We have 5 different groups from very different colleges, 2 from our College of Science, 1 from our College of Ag, and 1 from Liberal Arts and Human Sciences. So many different people thinking about this. And so we use sort of 2 main tools, and you actually saw examples of both of these. Templates, like you saw before, that help students build web pages, but the template part of it allows them for sort of to be guided and structured in certain ways to help sort of self and programmatic reflection, as well as a matrix that Noah had a good example of up there that we use for both programmatic and individual high-level assessment. How are you approaching problem-solving or inquiry or integration? So we get both the sort of individual creativity as well as the big assessment, the effort there. So it looks like this, if you want to just sort of see some pieces of it. That's the matrix that we use. As you see, it's sort of a very focused on the outcomes. Here down the left, we have problem-solving, inquiry, and integration. Those are the 3 outcomes that we're studying across the first-year experience. As well, down in the bottom one, so in the first column, students are able to choose what evidence they have of their problem-solving. Sometimes this is very guided. Certain programs say, this is your problem-solving assignment, put it in that box so that we can collect it across all the students. For other programs, they do several problem-solving activities, and students are asked to sort of pick their best representative work for that particular skill. And then secondly, over on sort of the right-hand column, then they reflect on the big issue. How does this help you progress towards problem-solving? We've actually developed across all the first-year programs common reflection forms that all of the students on campus, regardless of how they approach problem-solving, will answer. How do you define a problem? How did you approach its solutions, et cetera, things like that. And so ultimately, this can be customized as well with other groups adding on at the end. We do use a template, just like you saw before. Students, again, the thing I like about this is it's very student-centered. All of a sudden, all that information and filling out the grid for your program to help you think about problem-solving is taken out of that context to the individual. How does the student want to represent that work very well? And I think you can see up there that QEP matrix tab at the end. All that is brought out of the matrix and brought into the student's template automatically with the tools. But nicely, there's several other pieces that programs can customize with those other tab areas. So you see some people like the education one I showed you asking what does it mean to be a teacher and make that a page in your portfolio as we go. So very flexible between different programs and between different students, you know, lots of different ways that these can look. And then also, again, sort of taking advantage of the e-portfolio, very customizable in terms of who gets to see this material. Is it just one person on campus, an advisor, or is it public and it goes out so that it can be Google searched? You know, I mean, those are big questions that different programs want to answer very differently. We also, and this is part of the thing, you know, as an example of what we're doing with the first year experience, we're asking the teachers to get involved in this process. So we structured a guided portfolio for them to help them think about how they would approach these tasks in their courses. How do you approach problem solving or inquiry? What's your philosophy of the first year experience as you go through? And basically asking them to engage in the same process that this, we're asking the students to go through. And so I think that that really helped us get the teachers to understand both the technological struggles that students might go through, as well as the sort of pedagogical value of what they're doing. They get to practice reflecting as well. So, and again, this history of ideas for project, lots of supplemental data that comes around for reflection and self-assessment of these programs, et cetera. I'm going to turn it over to Jennifer now to talk about the support.
So one of the issues that has come up as we've gone through this process is how do we support faculty and students throughout this process? As we go through, what are the questions that come up? How do we best address their needs? And we've found a multi-pronged approach to this. We're very lucky we have a great space on campus called the Innovation Space. It's an open-door lab that students can come in and get help from the beginning to the end. So if they come in and ask for, I don't know how to upload my HTML code to this. I've got a video, but it's too large. It doesn't want to upload nicely. How do we do that? The key issue here is that we have a well-trained student help staff available. They are able to not only understand the process, so they've been through the training, they've created these pieces, but they understand what the expectations are. And I think that was one of our largest challenges as we started to grow this process, was ensuring that the folks that were doing the help understood what the final product needed to look like. So students would come in and say, I need to create this video project for my personal reflection for my e-portfolio. And we would have, our student help would look at it and say, oh, gosh, you can do it in Final Cut Pro and you can add all this stuff, not understanding that the final piece had to be uploadable and then also viewable through the e-portfolio. So we're working through those issues. We've done a significant amount of faculty development, both through our Faculty Development Institute, which is our standard situations where we could bring folks in for 30 or 60 or 90 minutes, let them come in and learn about ePortfolio. But more often, Mark, Tegan, and the ePortfolio group will go out and work with faculty either as a group, as English ePortfolio did, or on an individual basis. So those meetings sort of happen as the need arises. I think that faculty will come in and say, gosh, we're having an issue here. English, the ePortfolio that they're doing for their three-year growth plan, they sat down and had all of the English folks that were teaching the particular portfolio starting class go through the entire summer, and each week they met and were required to have a deliverable of their own so that, they went through the process. We've got OLCS, which is our Online Learning Collaboration Services. We provide training through that as well. And our JEDI program, which is our Graduate Development Institute. And surprisingly, we've got a lot of grad students that are out there teaching, and they are utilizing this for their personal portfolios. So, again, they're learning sort of by baptism, by fire, getting in there and doing it and putting those materials together. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. And I guess the large, and I might even sort of instead of going through all the details, I want to try to get to some questions, just give the message that none of this is done in isolation, that really the last slide was trying to show you sort of within my department I have to work with portfolios with several different groups to make sure they understand both the technologies and the concepts. And then also within Virginia Tech, I've been partnered very closely with, for example, our Office of Academic Assessment to get the message out about continual curriculum improvement, that it's not always about accreditation, but true and honest assessment, or Center for Instructional Design and Educational Research, or CIDR, which is much easier to say. is really focused on the teaching and learning and the scholarship of teaching and learning, and so we've partnered with them with several workshops to kind of get the idea of the pedagogy of portfolios out. So we have many partners on campus, for example, Residential Life at the End. 2 years ago, we began with our residential leadership community, which has very active students within the dorms that are doing leadership activities. Just this year, we began with our residential advisors all bringing portfolios. So again, we're looking for models that go outside the classroom to get this to be a pretty continuous process. And then finally, largely, and I definitely want to make sure these resources are out there, we have a lot of support from the larger community outside of Virginia Tech. Whoops. There's a roundtable reception coming up at some point. That's especially one of the things we really enjoy working with Sakai and the Open Source Portfolio Group, like I mentioned, was getting started and seeing models that were working out there and literally being able to borrow and start off with the tools that they had. And then now, especially, the continual conversation we have about what's the next generation of portfolio look like, how will it function. And so that conversation really keeps us engaged and makes sure that we're getting our voice out there, as well as borrowing from some of the best experts in the field. And then these other groups here, I just wanted to put their names out there for those that might be new to the ePortfolio realm. These are all different groups that have very valuable resources out there for ePortfolio folks. The International Coalition for ePortfolio Research starts cohorts almost every year that have sort of specific or generalizable research topics. So even if you're just getting started but you have a particular goal for retention or something like that, go after those. And a new one, the AAEEBL group, is really focused on the professional definition of what it means with this field. As you see, ePortfolio is not really in that title, but they're looking very much after how do we examine authentic experiences students have, experiential and evidence-based learning. So groups like that are really useful out there. You want to say anything about
that?
Sure.
So part of what the approach was to getting the word out there about ePortfolio and guiding students through this process was through these ePortfolio leadership teams. These were defined within both English and dietetics. What's great about this is these are students who have been through the ePortfolio process. They've developed their ePortfolio. They're coming back in as the experts. So we follow that students teaching students model. It's really great because they've been identified by the faculty as leaders in this, so we're not starting from scratch. They have some technology skills, but more importantly, they're aware of the resources of where to go for help. Faculty development, we've sort of mentioned this already, but what we're really focusing on here when we're talking to faculty is the teaching and the pedagogy. And again, our folks, our colleagues at Michigan mentioned that it is the we're getting 3 minutes. It's the pedagogy and the teaching and the learning outcomes that are really important in driving what we're doing, not the technology. The technology supports that, I think, has been an issue for us in terms of getting faculty there and getting the students there. We assume that our students come in with a certain set of skills with technology. We don't necessarily know that those are transferable skills, so that's been a challenge for us as we go through this, and we've offered a variety of workshops to get folks there. Training needs, we've been able to, again, the training needs with both student to student through those student leadership teams, but also through additional workshops available for students, by students. We do those in the evenings. They're free workshops. They teach them things like Dreamweaver so that they can learn how to do HTML and bring it in. Photoshop so they can bring their photos in if they're doing, say, a photography class or they need high-quality photos for their portfolio. Final Cut Pro and iMovie so that they can create these nice digital narratives. And those are offered throughout the course of the semester, free to students. And, again, we provide those resources as a support to this process. Great. And student feedback. So we're getting a lot of student feedback in terms of what's working, what's not working, what are the stumbling blocks. English ePortfolio folks have put together an entire booklet. We let the students run through that and give us their feedback. What is clear, what's not clear? One of the things that we found out throughout this process is the first guidebook had 7 different ways to do everything. How do I upload a picture? Well, you can do it this way, or you can do it this way, or you can do it this way. And what students wanted was something much more succinct, so one option. And then if they wanted to explore additional options, we had those resources available both through the drop-in lab and through the trainings that we could get the word out there on how to do it in another way.
And actually, largely, I was about to pull up the conclusion slide, but I think our conclusion slides are almost identical as we think about them. this really did start at the grassroots level, finding the early people and getting the word out through those successful programs to do that. And engaging all stakeholders, the main thing I wanted to point out there is that it's not just your administrators and faculty, but also the students. You know, getting the students excited about doing this, finding new and creative ways to do that and moving it forward. They're one of your main users, so you really have to really think about them. So, and we're, again, just sort of pretty happy with the functionality and the open, flexible environment as we go through. So I think that's probably good for us. I don't know if we probably ran out of time for questions, but please do come and talk to us if we can.
One question.
I'll let you moderate there. Yeah, that's good. I don't know who got their hand up first. You okay? Right.
Here's how I can show this, but you know, to what extent does the institution, through the use of a rubric, make explicit what it values implicitly?
And let me just comment about our first year experience. It's very much we started with the AACU value rubrics for those problem solving, inquiry, and integration. We got them sort of centralized for what we wanted to do the first year experiences, and we realized not only would we be using those for assessment, but those are teaching tools in the classroom because they give really good language on what the stages of problem solving are to students. So we very much get that out there. And I can't say that's a mechanism that's centralized, that's something that I do, but it's something I make very aware of the programs that I work with. I pulled up the education portfolio in particular because they're so tied into assessment that students work with rubrics all the time. Each one of these assignments that's gone in there has had a rubric applied to it that the student saw and was able to sort of see ahead of time as well as post. And I know this program in particular ties this into the grade. You know, the rubric values that come out of it are tied into your final grade so that those two things make sense together. So, yes, very much rubric talk is a big piece of what we do. So that's great. Yeah.
Want to talk to them afterwards?
Yeah, please do. If anybody has questions, come up. Well, thank you for coming. Appreciate it.
Can you fill out the evaluation online?
Greetings.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I hope I didn't completely screw up there.